Good Morning New Hampshire, powered by Sig Sauer. Now, back to Jack Heath on the Pulse of New Hampshire.
We're going to get right to it because he's, thank you, John Decker, on White House correspondent. John, sorry what we had John before the break. Thanks for your patience. And President Biden, I think very appropriately, a little bit late, but did come out and say what I think had to be said yesterday about the college, the chaos of protest across the country. John Decker.
He did. He said all the right things. He answered all the criticisms that had been leveled at the president, his administration, for not talking out about the protests, which have turned violent at many places across the country. The hate speech, the fact that at least one university, the University of Southern California, has canceled its commencement. So the president saying, look, he's in favor, and how should he not be, of the First Amendment right to protest that these students have, but not in favor when these protests turn violent, when these protests impact the lives of other students on campus like we're seeing.
Yeah, and again, I think it was, I saw it live because I was during my show. I think the president's remarks, we just had our governor on because we had had some protests and arrests at Dartmouth College the other night in UNH Durham, and I think it was appropriate. You know, I think a lot of people don't, you know, it's tough being president. I'm not always complimentary of the policies sometimes of the Biden administration, but once in a while, and I think you have to say, I think you got it about right. So thank you, John Decker.
Thanks, Jack. Have a great day. Have a great weekend, too. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thank you. All right, is Senator Lou, formerly number 87 UNH football, Senator Lou D'Alessandro, leading Democrat state senator, author of his book, I believe, Lion of the Senate, and just had your colleague, your Senate president, Republican, you being a Democrat. I'm just going to say this out of the gate, Senator. I know he's got a little bit of time left, but we've had a big changing of the guard this year, and I don't look forward to the day when I'm hearing that number 87 is calling it quits, too. But I have to say, Senator, you're in a very small boat of true public servants when you have D'Alessandro, Bradley, you know, Sununu as governor, his family, and Ann Custer stepping down, all the put the politics aside. These are family. These are big names of people who've given a lot, served a lot. Your thoughts on your buddy, the Jebster, announcing he's not going to run again as for Senate, and now he's Senate president.
Yeah, I think it was, I kind of knew it was coming because Jeb and I had had a conversation a few weeks ago, but obviously when it comes, you're shocked. Jeb, good public servant. He's really done a terrific job. We were mates in the House many years ago when he was in science and technology, and of course then in the Senate. Then he goes off to Congress and so forth. And you know, he's had some tough things in his life: the passing of his ex-wife. All of his children live in Colorado, so he wants to be able to see them and to watch his grandchildren grow up, and that's something that's really you don't want to miss that, and he doesn't want to miss that. And he's got a lovely wife. She sat right behind me yesterday in the Senate chamber, and she said it was his decision that he made that decision based on how he wants to carry out the rest of his life. And really, you can't blame him. Really outstanding public servant. He gets a tremendous amount of credit for building Medicaid expansion. Without his work and the work of a number of Democrats, I happen to be on that subcommittee when we did it, but Jeb certainly deserves a mantra for that. And the people of the state of New Hampshire appreciate that. But a job well done, and congratulations to him for his public service. And I really appreciate your kind thoughts. You know, there comes a time in life, Jack, when we all have to call it a day.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
And he made that decision. And let's hope that the good that he has fostered carries on. We got a lot of things to do. We've got to do the dish deal. That's got to be done. We've got to look at what happens in Manchester with CMC and Healthcare of America. That's another very, very important situation. Our mental health centers are in crisis. There are a lot of uncompensated care, so they're underwater. So a lot to do, and we got a lot on our plate. So hopefully we'll get it done. And you know, Jack, what's happening on our campuses is terrible.
Well, I want you to just maybe pause and let's talk about New Hampshire because of the arrest the other night. We had Governor Sununu on the show to kick it off yesterday, talking about he was up most of the night monitoring the situation, but there were almost 100 arrests at Dartmouth. As the governor said, not all students some professors and as well for resisting arrest, and also some adults who had nothing to do with Hanover or Dartmouth. And then the UNH, a much smaller number, but a number. Talk a little bit about here. Is this, you have any concerns about that? And the police are trying to clear the green. What are your thoughts?
Well, I'm always concerned about problems that take place on our campuses. I spent most of my life on college campuses as a coach, a teacher, and an administrator. And when they become violent, it becomes very impressive to me. You know, the president said it clearly. That we have, there's a lot of room for conversation, all right, as long as it's a peaceful conversation. I remember the 60s. This is not analogous to the 60s, but boy, it's close. I worried about that poor woman professor who was thrown down, 30-year teacher there, and certainly wasn't going to be violent in any way, shape, or form. I read the statement by the president of Dartmouth College. She said that they told people that they couldn't do certain things. She laid it out clearly and succinctly, so everybody knew what the story was. You hate to see confrontation.
I know, but you know, I got to tell you, I'm from a generation in life that, you know, if I'm in an area and I am told an hour, 2 hours, 20 minutes, half hour before, hey, clear the area. We're asking you to leave nicely. And if you stay in there, we're going to assume that you're not going to leave peacefully and we'll arrest you for resisting arrest. Right. It's pretty clear.
Very clear. Very clear.
So if you and I were in the area, we may have been arrested as well if they had told us, please, we're asking you to clear the area.
Yeah. I think there's a difference between the old ways, Jack, of people paying attention and the new ways. This is a new world we're living in, and we got to make those transitions. But I think that this whole thing is now becoming a worldwide situation. I understand that in Mexico City there are demonstrations, so it's a worldwide situation. We just got to get control of it.
I know. We need to go to break. Thank you for your kind words. Have a great weekend. Before I let you go, Senator, I'll let you do your patented goodbye. But I talked to a friend in academia at another college that has been kind of immune from a lot of this, and he had a very good point. And I'm sorry. Do you remember a lot of the protests, which I didn't understand, like Occupy Wall Street, and there was a movement. And then there was a movement where they'd shut down the highways and you couldn't say anything but a certain kind of lives matter. You couldn't even say blue lives matter because it was offensive if you said anything about police.
Right.
So we see these things. And he said, you know, this one seems and feels like it's just about hate. It's just about anti-civilization. The protesters just seem like they just want to protest civilization itself. And I thought that was profound.
I think it is profound. And hate has become pervasive, Jack, and that's something we have to deal with. But to all of our listeners and to you, a great, great, great American day. Stay happy, stay healthy, and please keep the dream alive and well. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Kevin, kind of an interesting day that flows with Bradley, D'Alessandro, Landrigan. Good morning, Kevin.
Hey, Jack. Great to be with you. Thanks for the kind words. Yeah, it was quite the day yesterday. I think, if you'll remember last week, I talked at some length about Bradley working on the marijuana legalization legislation. Didn't know this was going to happen, but I had a notion, and I didn't think it would happen now. I mean, this is typical of a guy like Bradley, which is the politically correct people, the folks who never make a mistake and are super cautious. I mean, the first rule in politics, right, is never become a lame duck. So you never say, I'm not going to run until it's over, right? But that's not Jeb Bradley. I mean, this was the time he wanted to do it. He had made the decision with his wife Karen and wanted people to know. He didn't want to, you know, hide it under a rock over the next 2 months, you know, while we're going to be doing a lot of big bills. He talked about them. The voters should know, his constituents in his district should know that's who the guy is. I mean, who else? I mean, as you alluded to him, I'm pretty old. I've been doing this a long time. And there's been very few legislators I've seen in covering politics in Massachusetts and in New Hampshire over the years who have a bill named after them. I mean, this guy literally it started 20 years ago. It used to be called a Bradley, and now it's called a Bradley Special. And what it really refers to is, like we talked about, and like he talked about, which is to try and find a solution, you know, for the good of the state. And it's not going to be exactly what I want or what you want, Jack, but it's going to be what the state needs. And that became over and over and over again from on all across the, like, policy spectrum. Bradley would get in the weeds and work with both sides and not write it himself. He'd write it in committee, literally often in his office, you know, with a Republican, with a Democrat, with all these constituent groups meeting there. And then he'd bring it to the table, to a committee, and say, here's what I think can work. And guess what? That's often what became reality. I mean, it's really been a sight to see. And he's, of course, very modest. But I agree with you. He will be missed. It will be noticed when he's not here a year from now. The place will go on, and the Senate will be fine, and the state, the ship of state will be on steady course, but it will be noticed. There'll be a time next spring, I guarantee you, where there's going to be an issue or controversy or whatever, and we'll say to ourselves, or maybe even out loud, you know, if Bradley was here, this, I think he'd get this done, you know, but it's not going to get done. That's what you miss.
Well said. You know, and Kevin, years ago, when I was down at Channel 5 before I came back to WMUR, WCVB, and I even I know there's a ton of controversy, but even Billy Bulger, the way he ran that state Senate, you could go in, you could go in at a different time, and you know, just there was just this willingness to at least talk with people who did not agree with you politically. And now you have this divisiveness within the Democratic Party itself, and then the Republican Party, look at Congress, and then the two together, and you just have this incredible smash mouth, you know, won't do anything they say, they're the enemy, there's no Junie Blaisdell. I remember the late senator from Keene, or Ralph Huff, and then I remember, you know, I can't believe I'm saying the late Ed DuPont. And Bill Bartlett, or in another one we haven't mentioned in a very long time, gentleman farmer, if you will, Doug Scammon, Speaker of the House. People who just really love this state. They $100 a year or less. They go in there. They drive in their own vehicle. They might get a small disbursement and a license plate, and then they sit in there for 10 or 12 hours. I remember Ed DuPont said to me one day, Kevin, because you know how sharp he was. And because he had a business over in Dover. And he said, Jack, you know what? I'm enjoying being the majority leader or the Senate president, working hard. We're making a big... This is when I was a TV reporter, and you were up there as a reporter. You talk to DuPont, and he'd say, boy, it's killed my business, though. I'm up here 60 hours a week.
Yep.
And they worked hard, and they cared. And you know what? They came together, even if they didn't vote together. And it's the antithesis of Washington. It's an exact, talking about Bradley or D'Alessandro, it's the exact problem of what's not working well in Washington of what works well here.
Yeah, it's true. I think a lot of this, too, is he, you know, Lou uses the word, and I don't think it can be overused in politics, which is relationships. And that's what's not, what you don't see, certainly in Washington. And you even see it less here in New Hampshire, frankly, which is identifying with people in the political divide, people on the other side, what do we have in common? You know, what are your interests? What do you care about? Here's what I care about. In other words, getting to know people that you're serving with before you start banging each other over the head on policy, right? And that makes a world of difference. It really does, because we saw it during COVID when legislating was done remotely, literally, through Zoom and all of that, it got even more caustic. Why? Because you weren't looking people in the face. And if you look people in the face and you're debating a tough issue, invariably you're going to have more respect, you're going to be more civil, you know, you're going to try and see the other side than when you're, like I said, in your pajamas on Zoom, just throwing bombs at one another. And so that's the part that you miss when folks like Jeb Bradley, Lou D'Alessandro, Donna Soucy, I mean, Jeb's right. There are still many of them here, and thankfully there are, because they basically are the folks who make the trains run on time in New Hampshire.
All right, Kevin, we'll get into some more topical stuff next week. The governor's race is heating up. College arrest at Dartmouth and UNH. Crazy, tumultuous week. Kevin Landrigan, thanks you for the reflections on Bradley. We appreciate it. Thank you, Kevin.
Have a great weekend, Jack. Take care.
Paul Steinhaus reports nationally for Fox News, GMI Studios. Good morning, Hampshire, the pulse of an H out there. Good morning, Paul.
Hey, good morning, Jack. And let's talk about former President Donald Trump. He starts his day right now in court in New York City. But when that session ends today, he heads back home to South Florida, Palm Beach. And this weekend, he'll be the headliner at a major Republican donor conference where, Jack, his a number of the people we consider his top potential running mates, they'll all be there. So should be an interesting weekend and maybe a potential screen test for some of these people who are vying to be Donald Trump's vice presidential nominee. Hey, let's bring it right back to New Hampshire, though. You talked about Jeb Bradley, who also spent 4 years representing the first district in Congress. He really was a special guy and somebody who had the ability to reach across the aisle to find compromise, which we really lack in this day and age. And he's going to be sorely missed in Concord, where things, you know, listen, they still get along in Concord. It's not as bad as Washington, but partisanship is getting tougher there every year. He will be missed.
And, Paul, before I let you go, Paul Steinhaus reports nationally for Fox and us, and I appreciate it locally, GMI Studio, not GMI, 6 Hour, many great sponsors. Good morning, Hampshire, the Pulse of Nation. Before I let you go, Paul, you know, talking about the Trump story on the shortlist, and it may, until, and I think this is the kind of decision. You know Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. He'll be making the decision. People will tell him what he'll make the decision, and I don't really make any assumptions till it's made, because as much of it will be about impact and wow and whatever as much as who he can work well with. But it seems like the list is changing. Matthew Bartlett, Darby Field Advisor, sent me some stories yesterday. We had Corey Lewandowski, close confidant of Donald Trump, on the show beginning of the week, and he was talking about that the inside camp of Trump is looking outside Washington, outside Congress, away from senators and politicians, because so many people want someone from outside coming in with him to run again if he were to get elected again or running again, of course, a presumptive nominee. And that would preclude people like Tim Scott of South Carolina, Marco Rubio, J.D. Vance. Now I'm hearing that that's who Trump may be looking at. So what do you think on the shortlist?
Yeah, let me throw one other senator's name out there as well. That's Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas. Fought in the Iraq War, was an up-and-comer in the party. So keep his name in there as well. For outsiders, you know, Lewandowski's talks. Lewandowski knows a lot because he still talks to Trump a lot. He is also, though, a top outside advisor to Kristi Noem, the governor of South Dakota, who's also on that list. Another one, a state north, North Dakota. Governor Doug Burgum up there, who, remember, he ran for president this cycle unsuccessfully. So, you know, Jack, it'll come down to what the former president thinks, and he probably won't make that decision for a while, maybe till late June or early July.
All right. Thank you, Paul. Paul Steinhauser.
Thanks, Jack.
Neil Levesque, Institute of Politics, Executive Director, St. Anselm College, joining us on a Friday. Good morning, Neil.
Good morning, Jack. Yeah, I think you guys missed a name, and that was Sarah Huckabee, the governor of Arkansas.
It could be. Yeah. And you and I think you agree.
Known
I think
very well that Trump left on good terms with him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's an outsider, and she passes a lot of tests, and she knows how to deal with the media, obviously, and she's the governor of a southern state, I think. A lot of good things right there on that resume.
I appreciate it. Neil, I want to maybe we'll end with thoughts on Jeb Bradley announcing his retirement, someone you know well. I was going to make a comment, and the show's busy, so it's getting away from me a little bit in terms of time. There's some things I do not scratch my head about on this chaotic college. It's become a movement, you know, and it's under the auspices of peace and pro-Palestine. But I'm not going to sit here and kid anyone. Too often it has crossed that line. And in me, the way I was raised and the history I respect and the families I grew up, there is no gray area with anti-Semitism. There's none with me. There's no room for it. And there's a difference between free speech and hate speech. But, you know, I get this feeling that it's interesting. We have the divisive politics today in our country, right? I mean, look at how divisive and everyone's raw last nerve. Washington, the smash-mouth politics, a very divisive, caustic environment. And we've seen it before, but it might be at an all-time high. Social media makes it worse. I'm wondering how much of these protests that we're seeing that are growing and spreading, yes, social media can help that happen. There is some orchestration behind it. We've seen other things like Occupy Wall Street, Black Lives Matter, Me Too movement. We've seen movements in this modern era, but this one is sort of taking a life of its own on. And I don't want to dissect, you and I could do a three-hour show on whether the college students have any idea what the heck they're protesting or not. Is it cool to protest? But I'm just wondering, is this just like anti-everything? Like, is this just part of this divisiveness that I hate the world, I hate civilization, I hate this country, I don't like Israel? I don't even know what I'm protesting, but I'm just going to protest life.
Well, I think it is an anti-civilization protest, and I think it started with this Occupy Wall Street, which was really anti-civilization, anti-capitalism, anti-commerce, and it went into several different forms over the years. And keep in mind, you know, we're looking at colleges, but, you know, a lot of those people that are going there are professional protesters who are doing this and sort of inciting college students to participate. You know, I'm around college students all day long. Right now they're in class and studying their tails off because they're facing final exams. There's no taking a day off. And I've had a lot of protesters here at the Institute of Politics, a lot. And recently, you know, I think I mentioned this, that we had Manchin here and we had climate change protesters. They were all wearing PLO, you know, Palestinian scarves, and you know they're
wait a minute, wait a minute, can you just go back, because that's almost like if I was an attorney in a trial, I said, well, excuse me, Mr. Levesque, can you please slow down and repeat for the court, Joe Manchin from West Virginia, possible VP running mate, can you refresh for the memory of people, this is in New Hampshire, you call, can you just say what you just said again about who showed up?
Sure. We had protesters who were actually not protesters. They were coming to shut down the event. And there were about 30 of them. They came up from Massachusetts. They were wearing these Palestinian scarves. This is back in January. And they're coming up to stop freedom of speech. So this whole idea that, you know, freedom of speech, they were coming here to stop that. But they're professionals. And what it was, you know, the Democrats did not want Joe Manchin going around potentially running in the New Hampshire presidential primary, running as a third party candidate, and they basically fired up a group of people to go and follow him around and give him a hard time, and that's what they do. And so
from the People's Republic of Cambridge,
right? I mean, look, I understand people are concerned about genocide, and some of these folks are. There's probably 20 different regions around the world where there's genocide going on right now. I would assume that a lot of these folks don't know where these places even are. The fact is, though, is I would love to get to the real heart of the matter and find out why it is that these things are happening on these college campuses and what's the real fire behind them, because there is money behind these things, and where's this money coming from?
Yep. All right, before I let you go, Jeb Bradley,
you know, the fact that he was in the State House for a long time, ran for Congress, served in Congress, and now in the State Senate, Senate President. You know, the thing about him is he's part of this very small group of people that really have contributed a lot of time and effort over the years in the State House, both sides of the aisle, but he's definitely contributed a lot to the state. And I think it's great that he's decided to say, okay, this is a new chapter for me, and I'm going to go on to that. But he is certainly going to be missed because he is so down to earth as far as he understands issues and legislation. And he's been both in Washington and here in Concord twice, and I think that it's going to be a huge hole for people in Concord, and I think he's pretty well respected all the way across the board, from people who have disagreed with him over time and people who have fought against him politically. Certainly respect his abilities and who he is.
Well said. Neil Levesque, have a great New Hampshire weekend. Neil Levesque, Institute of Politics, St. Anselm College. Thank you, Neil.
Thank you, Jack.
Aaron Real, NBC News Radio national correspondent, joining us. Food shortages. J-Dog and I, he's getting hungry for lunch. He doesn't want to hear that, Aaron.
Nobody wants to hear it. You particularly don't want to hear it when it leads to criminality and civil unrest, but that might be where we're going. So we are seeing that in Spain, let's use this, it's the world's biggest exporter of olive oil. They have had to have their production due to drought and extreme heat, and it has driven up the price of olive oil 112%. And people
wow.
might be saying, like, yeah, I know, it's incredible, the price increase. And while olive oil is wonderful, it's like, okay, this is kind of benign, just use butter. I get it. But it is the canary in the coal mine. Yes, olive trees are exceedingly vulnerable to climate change, but so many other crops around the world are too. And not only crops, but livestock. We actually saw in the summer of 2022 in Texas, herders had to cull nearly 50% of their herds because they didn't have enough grass and hay to feed them. And the humane thing to do was euthanize them as opposed to starve them to death. This is not a good situation. And the further this goes along, the more unrest we see. Actually, in Spain, there's now a lot of criminal gangs that are targeting Spain's oil mills, not only the grocery stores, the oil mills. The more hungry people you have, the more migration you will see and the more unrest that will follow.
Yeah, and you know, it's like a precious, it's pretty sad when that happens, but greed and crime, you know, all right. Aaron Real, NBC News Radio National. I'm going to check when I go home if I have any of if we have a bottle down there, because I don't know if I want to get a new one. Thank you, Aaron.
Take care, Jack.
Kathleen Dillon, not a regular. She's been on the show before. One of our great, great major players here at Benny Media. She does a ton of stuff, and she's helping me and us, and most importantly, our veterans, hoping to organize our big day a week from this Wednesday coming up May 15th, 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. We go 12 hours for Veterans Count, VetsCount.org, part of Easter Seals, my 10th annual. It's a big day for veterans. And Kathleen is an energizer helping on all fronts. Kathleen, good morning.
Good morning, Jack. Happy to be here.
Oh, you sound great in studio. Why don't you come on once a week with us? How are you?
I'm doing well. Yeah, happy Friday to everybody.
Are you nervous to be on with me?
No.
Not at all?
Not at all.
Do you have any tips like outside gardening, or do you want to talk about veterans?
Let's talk about veterans.
You're excited. It's a big day. You were a big part of it last year. I think we're more organized this year. You know what impresses me, Kathleen? A lot of people pulling and tugging. I think things are tough out there, inflation's high, but we just have some tremendous business and company support to help us do our 12-hour commercial-free broadcast day, don't we?
We do. Yeah. We're so appreciative of our business partners who are stepping up to support veterans in our state. And I think it's a great mindful moment to remember that although this state is such a small state in terms of population, that per capita we have, you know, the third highest quantity of veterans per capita. So the need in our little state of New Hampshire is actually very great. And it also increases the likelihood that each and every one of us living and residing in New Hampshire know or interact with a veteran more frequently than maybe some others in other areas of the country.
Well, let's go through some specifics, because I know our day presenting sponsor, FedPoint, they always are a great team. Service Credit Union, they're always there for veterans. Of course, many of their members are military families, but they're always there. We have Coca-Cola, Joe Faro and Tuscan Brands, Northeast Delta Dental. Tell us about some of who they are.
Some of the other vendors?
The sponsors. Yeah,
okay.
Go ahead.
We have Eastern Propane and Oil.
They do a great job, too.
We also have the Better Business Group from Eversource coming. And if you're driving by, don't forget to salute. They'll be flying a flag high from two of their bucket trucks out front. We have Bonnet, Page, and Stone up in Laconia. Jazzmore Roofing, Premier Roofing. We have Abundant Life Stoves and Spas from Chichester. Patio Barn in Amherst, Heritage Home Services, and Great Bay Spa and Sauna.
And great players. And how do I say this? Most all the time, you're professional and talented and great. I'm biased because I like you as a human being, but what fires you up? Why do you care on this one? Because you do a lot of extra time. What are you passionate to support the veterans?
Well, my dad was a veteran. But I actually just think it's the humanness of all of it. One aspect of you know, coordinating this with you, Jack, is that we record veterans who have actually utilized services from Veterans Count, Easter Seals, working with care coordinators, and to hear their very real human stories. I know one of the gentlemen we just spoke to is in his 70s, and he was just kind of getting squeezed out with the cost of renting an apartment slash condo. So we know that's very real, but if you're on a fixed income, an incredibly proud human who has served this country, and now you're having to ask for help, it's sort of the last place you want to go. I think what makes me so happy to work with Veterans Count is hearing that they don't just Band-Aid something. You know, they actually worked with the city, with the landlord, with, you know, this client, this veteran, and everybody paid a portion appropriately of what they could pay to, you know, bring this gentleman's rent current and save him from being evicted and then find him more suitable, affordable housing moving into the future. So it isn't just the immediate Band-Aid. It's really looking at the whole human and seeing what really needs to be done to make somebody whole and sustainable and bring back, you know, their pride in themselves. Yeah. And yeah. So this radiothon allows new listeners to hear, hopefully veterans or to somebody who's listening can connect with a veteran they know that could be struggling and to get them to seek the help that they need, whether it's housing or mental health counseling, anything.
And, you know, you and I have noticed because you're actually you've sat in on some of these meetings with care coordinators and veterans. You and I have seen some themes emerge, have we not, Kathleen, Dylan?
We have.
Benny Media. Affordable housing. Veterans literally on a fixed income being priced out of their rent, out of a home at a tough stage and age in life. Never easy, but a little harder when you might be closer to 70 than 40. Also, the support of care coordinators to support all aspects of the veterans' challenges, whatever they may be.
Correct. And I think, you know, one of the stories we also heard this week was a veteran who went in and served, you know, post 9/11, really had a sense of pride and a desire to serve this country, changed his life and did a tour in Iraq. But when you come back, there is kind of a gap. You know, the
huge gap.
We do such a good job supporting them while they're in and telling them what to do and keeping an eye out. But then they come back and it's a bit of a free fall. Who's checking in on them? And I think the readjustment to civilian life is real. And Veterans Count is catching these people.
Real quickly, Kathleen, we have a minute. Kathleen Dillon. Do we have any room, because these companies and sponsors, really, they're employees. It's a big part of what they do in the philanthropic sense. Is there any room for any more businesses to grab a half hour? I know we're pretty much sold out. Yes or no? It might be a no. And if so, how can they follow up with you?
They can reach me at kdillon, D-I-L-L-O-N, at binnymedia.com. And yes, we always have room. We will make something happen to bring the support to Veterans Count.
Awesome. Hey, personally, congrats on your son's big graduation coming up. Thank you very much, Kathleen.
Thank you. All right. Have a great weekend.
Rory O'Neill, NBC News Radio national correspondent, with that very question and answer. Good morning, Rory.
And good morning, Jack. For the most part, the charges in these cases get dismissed. That is for people who are peacefully protesting, but get arrested for, most of the time, criminal trespassing. But look, if you're involved with assaulting a police officer or if they can prove that you damaged property, there may be more serious consequences. But for the most part, we've seen that these cases will probably be dismissed. It'll be up to the colleges and universities to discipline their students. As for those extraneous people, the people who are stirring things up but don't really belong on campus, that'll be up to the DA.
I don't know. Go back in history, Rory. It's a Friday. But is the Justice Department and FBI involved in some of these sort of professional agitators? Because they've broken into buildings, they breached the Hamilton Hall. We know in the past a lot of these people, they went after them with the full muscle, the federal indictments. Are they looking at any of this?
The FBI director said about a week ago that the FBI doesn't get involved in these local kind of protests. Not necessarily, but they're going to be some congressional hearings later this month that might shine a light on it.
Oh, I see. I see. Local, not. Oh, okay. Well, we'll see. All right. Thank you, Roy.
Thanks, Jack.
Get some good news to end the week and begin the week. We end the week on a Friday with Tom Raffio, CEO and President, Northeast Delta Dental, and, of course, Delta Dental Radio on the weekends. He'll tell us who the guest of his show is and author of one of his books, Stories from the Starting Line. Good morning, sir, Tom.
Good morning, Jack. And, you know, and I was telling Jay offline that I start listening to your show about 11 o'clock just to get the context. And one, you had me hysterics with the Bonanza reference to Haas. hopefully there's more than four of us that understand the reference. But then listening to your nice comments about Jeb, and then in turn him calling you the superstar of radio. So I'm just honored because the superstar of radio gave me my first job at The Pulse, and now I'm the longest running host at The Pulse with the same host and curly hair, you know?
I love it.
So anyway, so there's lots of good news this morning. I welcome the New Hampshire nonprofit group in. We have something in New Hampshire called New Hampshire Giving, and it happens in the first week or so in June, and basically all the nonprofits get together to determine how to leverage it. And as you know, nonprofits really are the bedrock for human services in New Hampshire, and people don't realize that Delta Dental is actually a 501c4 nonprofit, which allows us to more easily do things like the veterans program and the Medicaid program. And then a Monday night coming up, I'll talk about it if I call in on Monday, we have the New Hampshire Business Committee for the Arts Gala. Even though I'm a jock, Jack, I support the arts, and it's a great evening.
Yeah, of course. I love
it. Without art, you know, there is no civility.
Right. Yeah.
And then tonight I'm heading over to the Discovery Center because Jeannie, the current executive director, I actually was on the team that hired her over two decades ago. She's retiring. And I'm not retiring, though, Jack, don't worry. And we're meeting a potential, you know, replacement. So we'll tell the potential successor, that New Hampshire's obviously, you know, a great place to live. And then as far as racing this weekend, we have a Cinco de Mayo race Sunday in Bedford at 9:15. Now, you think that's an unusual time, correct?
But
what they're trying to respect there's a local church that requested a 15-minute later start. So we're doing that, and that's part of the Delta Dental points chase. And then this weekend, I have this is one worth listening to. Dr. Christina Schiltz will be on the show with me, and she's someone that has served our country. Her family is in Iowa, still there. But when she served our country, she was stationed here for a while and realized what a great place this is. So she handles, she's part of my team that handles veterans in the Upper Valley area, and there are plenty of those. So she'll describe what she has done for veterans. You know, and getting back to Jeb, I mean, that's you mentioned it, but without Jeb and working hard across the aisle with Cindy Rosenwald, who's a Democratic senator, the dental Medicaid program would not have occurred. So I think he's definitely a role model for the for the future. And then Stories from the Starting Line helps sales for the veterans program. It's has a brand new chapter. There's 90 runners. You can get it at Gibson's here in Concord, the Bookery, and the Millennium Running Store, as well as on Amazon. So it's going well. And again, Jack, thanks for and I agree with Jeb. You are the superstar.
Well,
of radio.
What do you? Let's just talk a little sports for a moment.
Sure.
Okay, because I'm a Bruins guy. Tough one to predict. And what's your feeling in tomorrow night?
I am so like you mentioned to Jeb. You're kind of depressed about it. I don't have a good. I mean, our goaltender is playing well, but we just can't get any shots on goal ourselves. So I'm not feeling good about it, you know. So, I mean, I would be delighted if they won and obviously rooting for them, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was a repeat of last year because they've got that in their heads now.
Good point.
But meanwhile, hopefully, I'm hoping that the team that the Celtics play, either Cleveland or Orlando, that – that goes to Game 7, because the longer that goes on, the longer Porzingis can repair his calf.
Before I let you go, because your board and you and Dr. Mitch Crane, your network of dentists, have done so much to help plug that gap where veterans have not been getting their oral health care, but you're also supporting a week from Wednesday, and I'll see you in there. Make 12 hours count for veterans count. I guess the question is, the last moment or two, what are your thoughts on all the wonderful veteran service groups out there and efforts, but the challenge that we all face of just letting more and more veterans and their caregivers know about it? Because I am hearing that a lot of veterans still, they just don't know what's out there, and they're very reluctant to ask for any help or support. Support they've earned, by the way. How do we, and we try to do it, but the real goal is letting more veterans know there's more help and support right here in the real New Hampshire way.
Great point. As you point out, veterans are used to serving, so it's hard if they need to put their hand out. But I think with organizations like Veterans Count and what you do for Make 12 Hours Count, and I'll definitely see you in the afternoon hour then, we have to keep doing that. And I found this true on the dental side. We have this wonderful program now, so if you're not eligible for the VA or Medicaid, you know, Delta Dental will take care of you. And I have brochures out there, social media, and still I run into veterans who are unaware of the program. I was at the Bedford Rotary Tuesday morning doing a talk on the running book, and this came up as an aside, and there were many veterans in the room who weren't aware of the program. So I think we just have to keep plugging away and recognize that Rome wasn't built in a day, and we just keep getting the word out. And with these great organizations, whether it's Veterans Count, Phil Taub, what Delta Dental is doing, what the VA is doing, we just have to, all of us, do our job to get the word out. And you do that better than anybody. So thank you, Jack.
Well, have a good weekend. I know there's no rest for the weary. Thank you, Tom.
You got it. I'll talk to you Monday. Right. Thanks. Bye-bye.